Have you ever applied a skincare product to your body and wondered what kind of crazy chemicals are in it, and then read the ingredient list and realized you can't even pronounce half the ingredients? Your skin is the largest organ of your body, and what you put on it becomes part of you. In fact, if your skincare has chemicals you wouldn't eat, you probably ought not rub it all over your body. This is why in our house we use Tallow Skin Solutions Body Butter. It is made with all natural ingredients that are safe enough to eat and offer your skin the nutrients it can thrive on. The tallow is sourced from a family farm in Georgia, which practices sustainable regenerative agriculture. The body butter also has organic coconut oil, organic cocoa butter, and organic essential oils. The texture is silky and luxurious as it is whipped to the perfect consistency. Enjoy one of the five different scents. My personal favorite is creamsicle, which blends vanilla and orange and smells delicious. If you've never used a natural product like this, you are in for a treat. Go to tallowskinsolutions.com and enter code MINDFUL for 20% off. That's tallowskinsolutions.com and use code MINDFUL for 20% off your next order. Hello and welcome to the Mindful Movement Podcast. I'm your host, Les Raymond, and I want to thank you for joining me today for another episode. I have my best friend on today, someone that you might already be familiar with, someone I've been trying to get on this podcast forever. I have Sarah Raymond with me today, the voice behind all the amazing meditations that are on our channel, The Mindful Movement. And I've been trying to get her on for a while, and she's just a real busy lady. But she worked it into her calendar today to grace us with her presence to chat about anything that I choose that I want to chat about. She wanted a plan, and I purposely did not give her one. So I think we're all going to witness Sarah a little bit outside of her comfort zone today, which is exciting. I get to see a lot of Sarah behind the scenes that you aren't exposed to, obviously, because we've been married for 17 years and we live together. But for a lot of you, you might just know her as like this voice on YouTube that like allows you to just cultivate more peace in your life. And I think if you're watching this, you've probably already heard her, and I know I can speak for myself and probably for a lot of you out there. We're just really grateful that there's a Sarah Raymond in the world, especially times like this when we all could use maybe a little bit more peace in our lives, to have a tool that we could rely on to help us find that from inside is just amazing. So thank you personally for what you've done and how you've helped me. And on behalf of our listeners, I think there's a lot of people out there that would also like to just say thank you. And how grateful that they are for you and for what you do and what you put out in the world. Without further ado, Sarah, say hello to the Mindful Movement Podcast audience.
Hello to the Mindful Movement audience. Do you need an introduction?
No. thanks for making time, Sarah. So I thought it'd be nice to maybe share just a little bit more about yourself to the audience, to give people context maybe of how you got to a point where you go into a small soundproof closet every week to record by yourself early in the morning before anybody's awake usually, and put out this content that seems to have just such a further reach than we would have ever expected when it all began. How did you get to that point?
Okay. I guess I could start with how I got into meditation in the first place. And aside from having a YouTube channel, I was introduced to meditation in my late 20s, early 30s, I guess. And I was using it as a way to help me find clarity in terms of what I wanted in life. At that point, I felt like I had just kind of gone through the motions of what was expected of me and what I was supposed to do. You know, you go to, well, for me at least, I went to college. That was expected of me. And then you get a job. And then start a family, and I did all those things and had a career, and I just wasn't really finding that I was fulfilled, and I was always looking for the next thing. And meditation helped me really connect with who I was and what I wanted and the feelings that I was experiencing that maybe I was naturally pushing down. So that's how I found it, and I think that's the primary use, I guess, or benefit that I get is a stronger connection with myself and what I need and want and desire, and it gives me clarity. So that's, I would say, how I started practicing meditation. And then the YouTube channel, I think, was more of an accident. I had started a podcast with the intent to interview other people in the mindfulness community so that I could learn from them and, you know, get the message out, get information, educate people, and inspire people on the topic of meditation. But I quickly found out that I wasn't really that great at interviewing. And I could have probably gotten better, but I had at the same time started the YouTube channel. And really that was a way to put meditation practices out for, at the time it was for Pilates teachers in training that I was working with, so that they had an avenue to use the practices the way that I did to find clarity and to develop, an inner conversation. So really it was just a way to deliver the messages to the people that I was working with. And I wasn't intending to have this big YouTube channel or a business around it. So that kind of happened accidentally, I guess.
So it got to a point where I guess you felt more like a chore to do this podcast, and it wasn't really fulfilling because you didn't think you were doing good. And I guess for whatever reason, you didn't feel inspired to try to get better at it. It just didn't feel right. It didn't feel like you.
Well, I would say that I have a tendency to take on more than I can actually handle. And so I had taken on this podcast and this YouTube channel, and also I was running a business, a Pilates and yoga studio, and teaching and mentoring teachers, so, and family, and, you know, all the things, and it was too much. And I came to a crossroad or a point where I realized I could only get better at either creating this YouTube channel, which was growing pretty well, surprisingly, at the time, or I could get better at being a podcast host and interviewing people. I couldn't really do both. And they were both fulfilling, I would say. I don't think I was uninspired to be a podcast host. I just didn't think that I had the time to really devote to hone in on that skill.
And I remember it being like a surprise. Like there was, you know, this, like the front burner was this new project of the podcast, and the YouTube side was this really kind of side thing. And mm-hmm. then it was almost like, oh, look over here. Look what people were saying about these videos. Listen to this feedback.
Right. Look how many people are viewing this video. Like, how did they even find out about it?
Yeah, we weren't doing any marketing, and people would say things like, you know, keep this up. This is good. Subscribers will come.
Yeah, that's
and,
true.
And we kept on getting those little, you know, drops coming in into the mindset of like, oh, let's just keep chugging along. Like maybe there's something to this.
Right.
And then, I don't know, after 6 months or so, it seemed like, oh, the dial's starting to move on this. Like it started to grow faster and faster every month.
Yeah, I remember, you know, you're more the numbers person in this partnership more so than I am. And I remember, you know, I would put a meditation out every week. I had committed to, I think at the time it was like every Monday or something. So I committed to every Monday, and I did that very consistently. And then you were looking at the analytics and saying, you know, this is growing. Even the ones that you put out initially are still getting views. And you kept looking at the analytics and saying, you know, you can see this upward trajectory. And I just, you know, I just kept putting content out, and I didn't even really go back and look at the analytics until much later.
Yeah.
But you were motivating on that front.
I was. It was interesting. I was reading the comments every day, and I felt it almost like it had a therapeutic effect on me. I know that at the time I was going through a lot of personal struggles. This was around the time I quit drinking. Where anytime you quit drinking, you start to see like why you were drinking and what you were soothing, what you were hiding from yourself. So you get all this shit that just kind of bubbles up. And you know, you see all the things in your life that you're not real happy about. And it was emotionally and mentally like a challenging time for me. And I remember just the act of reading all the positive comments would create like a chemical change in my brain. Like it would be a mood changer. And it was hard. It was almost surreal thinking there's these people all over the world that we're touching in this such a positive way to the point that they feel compelled to share these amazing experiences and sometimes just send us donations out of the blue, which was really mind-boggling to us. And one of the most, you know, rewarding sensations you can get is when someone gives you a gift completely unsolicited like that. Right. It was a very powerful message to us from the audience that we were getting that, and we took it as a sign that we're on the right track. Let's keep doing this. And what else do people need? And what are they suffering from? And usually the things that would come through in like writing or ideas were just things that, you know, we're suffering from and things that we need. I know that I haven't, you know, you write the vast majority of all the meditations and I write some of them, and all the ones I know I've written seem to come from me putting on paper what I need to hear myself to get me through whatever suffering I'm in at that time in my life.
Yeah.
Do you feel that you experience that too when you sit down to write content?
Sometimes I think, you know, it comes to me during my own meditation practice. And I know that I had, you and I had both been going to a meditation or a yoga facility that offered meditation retreats. And during those meditation practices, you know, feelings would come up or emotions or visualizations. And a lot of times I would use that experience and, you know, expand on it in the meditations that I would write. Or I would find that I neglected my meditation practice for some time, and then I was realizing, okay, I'm feeling overwhelmed, I'm feeling anxious, I'm, you know, these things are triggers or reminders for me that, okay, I need to get back into the practice that, you know, refills me. And so I might write a practice that, like you said, is what I need in that time.
Gotcha.
I have done a few paintings that were in response to meditation practices as well, but they're not really that good.
You mean like something that comes up in when you're sitting on a cushion, whatever, that makes you think of something you want to paint, and then
I have experienced you know, colors or shapes or like an image. It's not necessarily like a flower or a tree or a person. It's just abstract, and it just stays in my visual field during a practice. And so I'm like, I don't know if you call it looking at it, but I'm seeing this image and it just stays there. So I'm like, okay, I think that'll be a painting.
Oh, that's cool. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
So much to learn about you.
I'm not keeping it a secret. It just has never come up.
So speaking of practice, I mean, there's a lot of, you know, forms of meditation, styles of meditation. I think on our channel, a lot of what we put out is, I would say, either hypnosis-based or affirmation or like visualization-based guided meditations where, you know, there's some type of task. Like there's a thing, a concept that's being maybe worked on or practiced within there.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas, you know, some forms of meditation, the task is trying to eliminate tasks in a way.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and there's a big spectrum of there of things that could be fit on like the table that is just meditation, like all
Sure.
the different ways and how it could be used as different tools in your life right now. And I know this changes, it fluctuates for me a lot. I go in phases of what I'm like practicing at the time. Like, what's your practice look like now, both in like a specific, like an actual meditation practice, and maybe just like a mindfulness-based practice? Like, what are you working on? What are the things that you're thinking about through your day where you're leaning on a mindfulness approach to like navigate whatever that activity is or concept that you're working with?
That was a very layered question.
I make really long questions. I try to stretch my questions out as long as possible
Well, you did a
to
good
make,
job
I do it to
there.
make myself sound smarter, but I think it's really just, that's a lie that I'm telling myself in my head. I don't actually sound smarter. I just think I feel smarter when I have so many words to come out of my mouth. I'm doing it right now.
You're lucky that you're adorable and I love you. So let me start and see if I can answer the more formal practice question. So currently, and like Les, mentioned, this changes, and I try to be fairly fluid with what I'm doing and allow it to change based on what I might need, because I know that if I try to force consistency or regularity, that can be problematic for me just because I'm not really listening to what my own needs are. And I think that for me, that's really important because, I give and give and give, and I'm a mom and a wife and a daughter and all the things that, and I love to, don't get me wrong, I give a lot. So this practice really is for me, and I need to listen to what I need in order to gain benefit from the practice. So that being said, currently I have a tendency to have a lack of focus currently. So I like to move first, get kind of the blood flowing, get loosened up. So I like to do a little bit of either yoga or Pilates or just gentle stretching and move. And then when I do come to sit to practice meditation, generally, some type of breath practice works well for me, or something that calms the nervous system. So I do a lot of like self-massage, like facial, neck, that type of thing. And it's really brief. I mean, this could be, maybe 20 minutes of movement, and then I don't know, 2 to 3 minutes of self-massage, and then going into breathing practice, and then meditation.
What kind of breathing practices are you into right now?
Again, because I find that my focus is a little bit scattered at the moment, I'm not sure, what that's about exactly, but happens to be that way this time at the moment. I like to do something that helps me to focus. So it might be counting inhales and exhales, or like we've done on the channel, 4-7-8 breath. That helps to really draw my attention from outside of my body to inside of my body and slow my thought process, the sort of scattered thought process down. That's one example.
So something to get you focused.
Yeah, like something that is generally, like you mentioned, task oriented. I know that that feels sometimes opposite of meditation, like you're just being and not doing in meditation. But in order for me to get to that state of being, I need to like do things to get there.
And then what? And then so you move, you massage, you
Breathe.
sit, you breathe, and then are you listening to something? Are you just focusing on your breath? Are you trying to just vanish into the abyss?
I would say it depends on the day, the time, my mindset. If I'm really having trouble focusing, I like to listen to something guided because it, it directs me a little bit. Even though I have practiced meditation. I know how and what to do. It just helps to have a little bit of guidance and to kind of let go of the control of the practice. And I feel the same way about movement. Like I teach Pilates and yoga, and I know what to do and how to do it. But, you know, if I'm teaching classes or private sessions all day long, the last thing I want to do is the same thing for myself, you know? So it's a bit of freedom and a way to let go of my job, to let it be for me. Does that make sense?
Yeah. I don't know if I've ever thought about it that way. I think it's a really good point that a lot of folks have a tendency to control things in their life. And I've never thought of the idea of being able to have a guide in a way is letting go of control and turning that mechanism off, which, you know, I guess it would open up for some vulnerability.
Yeah. Yeah, let someone else be in charge for, you know, some time. Yeah. It's interesting because Molly, our daughter, and I don't know, a couple years ago, went to a workshop that was meditation and painting. And the woman that was teaching it, she's an artist and a therapist, and she had us kind of going out of the box. And so when I paint, I'm a hobbyist painter. You know, I do it as a way to just have some creative flow. I'm not like an expert or anything, but anyhow, I like to, you know, make something that looks like something. You know, I do a lot of flowers or leaves, trees, that type of thing, nature, but like I want my painting to look like something. So in a way it's very controlled. But this woman said, if that's your tendency, let's do something that's out of control in a way. So, you know, the painting that I worked on during that workshop was very abstract, and I used like a, you can tell that I'm not really a professional painter. It was one of those.
For the record, Sarah's done some really beautiful paintings. They don't all come out beautiful.
They don't all come out
beautiful. Some of them coming out,
you know,
very
it's,
nice.
So anyhow, I was using a palette knife, not even a paintbrush. And I'm like, you want me to use this tool to like make art? But at the same time, it was very freeing because I was able to let go of the control of the need for perfection. So I take that mindset into my practices as well. It was a little bit of a tangent, but there was a point to that story.
No, yeah, definitely. What other practices are you doing now? I mean, you're still really busy, a lot busier than I am.
We're busy doing different things.
Yeah, we're busy. But I would say you don't have as much time in your day to say, what do I want to be doing in this time? How do I want to allocate this time towards myself or towards my kids? Or like, there's not as many opportunities for you to plug in what you want at that time. So with the more limited time that you have, whereas I have a little more freedom, I could kind of do almost whatever I want to some degree. So like, if I wanted to do something and it was going to take an hour, I could do it. Whereas you don't have quite the freedom these days and that luxury, which makes the time a little bit more valuable.
I would say, though, I don't do well with that much freedom.
Why? What does it turn into? Like,
it turns into like
Netflix,
nothing. Yeah. It's
popcorn
like
popcorn and Netflix.
Well, you are giving away my secrets here. You know, I feel like I thrive on a structured schedule. Otherwise, like you said, it turns into like, you know, a day full of, when you look back at it, nothing. And granted, there are some days that I really need that. And I, you know, it refills my energy source or what have you. But then, if I weren't to have anything on my calendar every day, then those days would just happen so frequently where like you're very regimented about, you know, your workout practice, your breathing, your meditation, like you're very diligent and committed. And I find that I'll find every excuse in the world to not do whatever, you know, whatever that thing is that is not on my calendar. That, like, I mean, I even will schedule my practices. You know, I have on my calendar, I think most days at 7 a.m. movement, meditation, and my mindset practice, which generally happens with journaling. But I literally have an appointment on my calendar. Otherwise, I wouldn't do it.
So given that, then are there any other things like outside of work-related things? Mm-hmm. What else are the things that you're trying to do on a regular basis other than like the meditation practice, what you explained like in the morning when you're doing your stretching and your breathing and your meditation? What other things are you making an effort to work into your day?
Well, I've been walking a lot more over the last year, I'd say, just for enjoyment, not necessarily for exercise.
Are you listening to stuff when you walk? Are you just listening to the birds? Or are you on a book? Or
I usually have something plugged into my ears, whether it's a podcast or an audio book, or a lot of times I just enjoy music. So there's usually something plugged into my ears, unless, you know, like if I'm walking with you or Molly or my mom, then I tend not to obviously have something in my ear and we're chit-chatting.
Walking, anything else?
I have a house plant hobby.
Is that what you call it?
Or an addiction?
Some would call it an obsession, addiction. Those are words that come to mind, yeah.
Well, it brings me joy. Like, I find it to be therapeutic.
I don't know, for any of you out there that watch our content, whether it's the podcast or the movement videos.
There's always a plant.
There's always a plant. So we live in a house that for 8 or 9 years never had probably more than like one or two plants.
Yeah, well, you would bring plants in and then not take care of them and then they would die.
I thought plants just knew how to be good plants.
Maybe outside when they get rained on.
I always bought bad plants that didn't know how to be good plants. So they gave up being good plants under my watch. Mm. Had nothing to do with me. No. But over the last couple of years, yeah, you got into the plant thing and has really beautified our house. I'm really grateful for it. I love having the plants and I love not having the responsibility to keep them alive. I love that you are finding it like therapeutic, that process of managing the dirt, the light, the nutrition, whatever they need.
It has been a learning process. I have let a few plants die on my time.
Yeah, plants, it's a interesting thing. I mean, we like to garden. I remember I had a garden at like a public plot where you know, kind of rent a garden plot at our last house when we lived there. It was like nearby, very close to actually where we both grew up. And you know, the garden's been there for like a really long time. So you'd be able to kind of mingle with the gardeners, and some of them have been at it for 30 years plus. So there's a lot to learn. And I remember one of the first days, you know, we're there, I think they had the kids with me, and you know, we're working the land there, and you know, it's probably like a 500 square foot plot, and one of the like master gardeners comes up and they're just chit-chatting. There was a nice community they had there, and his tip was something along the lines of, you know, the first year of gardening is really just like a learning lesson,
right?
And then the second year of gardening is really like a learning lesson, and the third year of gardening, and you get the idea. And and you know, he's obviously had it for a long time, and you're just still kind of learning. And so, yeah, it's a process, but it's really been nice. First of all, it's kind of transformed the house, because how we went from having a plant or two. How many plants do you think are in this house right now?
You probably know exactly. I don't know exactly. I mean, I want to probably guess 100.
Over 100. So that's a lot of plants. 100 maybe, plants is a lot of plants.
Maybe too many?
I don't think it's too many. I am curious if there's more room. Like, you know, it forces you to get creative.
Yeah.
Because you're like, well, you start changing the framework and how you're approaching a question. Like, you know, where else can a plant go? Or look at this corner, like, how could a plant fit in this space?
If you remember, in our bedroom, we had our dresser on one wall, and I just had this idea to move the dresser under the window on the other wall, and just instantly we had room for probably 10 more plants.
Voila, plants arrived.
Right in front of the window.
So. And it's nice to see. I know you have, I don't know if it's like a subscription, but one of these plant memberships where you get plants.
Oh, I had to cancel that because I have too many plants.
Oh, too many plants. So for a while there was like a monthly delivery
of
like a mystery plant or whatever. Right. And Sarah lights up when it's kind of a running joke in the house, like when a box gets delivered, because we're always having deliveries now for obvious reasons.
Right.
And when there's a box that's big enough that it could potentially be a plant delivery, Sarah perks up. And it's nice to watch you do that. And I'm grateful that you're doing it, because we all obviously are benefiting from it. So I appreciate it. So you got into plants. So walking, planting.
I probably would like to be painting more, but I guess the inspiration hasn't been striking too frequently lately.
Hmm. Is there anything else that you want to fit in that you're like juggling the time slots now to see how you can? Or
I mean, we've been trying to take a, you know, quick trip here and there, but that's difficult at the moment, and maybe a little bit more traveling down the road. Or I mean, I think probably a lot, like a lot of people nowadays, we're missing a in-person community and interaction that way. So eventually, you know, I'd like to be able to build that a little bit more. But
great.
Seems like it's a tough time to do that.
Yeah. Well, you know, the weather is changing here. The season is changing. I find that, you know, going into fall just seems like creates this, like a sense of like going inward more, like quieter, you know, more sleep, more rest, days are shorter. I feel like it's a good time for people to go inward and do more inner work. So, you know, a lot of our audience tunes in to what we do for that. It's a part of their inner work, whether they're listening to meditation or doing a movement video or getting a quick tip of maybe changing the way they look at something that they're dealing with in life, maybe something that's stressful. And maybe we could take a moment to go over the things that are maybe on the horizon that are like what's available for people that are listeners that want to take additional steps on their like inner work and maybe want some guidance. If they do like the content that we're providing and they want a little bit more, whether it's in a group format or individual, there's some things that we do offer now and some, I think, really exciting things that are on the horizon. Maybe this is a chance that we could just chat about those.
Sure.
So if you listeners are out there okay with that, then we'll do that.
Sounds good.
So what's been available that I think is an extremely powerful tool, it might not be at a price point where it's accessible to everybody, but for those that are interested in one-on-one work, what's nice about that is the way that you seem to be able to customize your guidance for someone that's trying to go through some type of personal growth or self-improvement or cleaning up some childhood mess or whatever, something that's blocking maybe them from getting a belief system that kind of works with them as opposed to against them, if you will. The private sessions that you're doing, maybe we could explain for those listeners out there that haven't gotten that or maybe don't even know that we offer that, that you offer that.
Sure.
Maybe we could kind of paint a picture of what that process looks like for someone that's thinking about it or interested. What does it entail?
Okay. Well, the hypnotherapy sessions are generally around 2 hours, sometimes a little longer, sometimes a little shorter, but that seems to be the average. So during the session, we discuss what the issue is that the client that comes to see me would like to work on. Sometimes it's very cut and dry. It might be depression, anxiety, OCD. It might be smoking cessation. It might be releasing excess weight. So those are very cut and dry. So we know that the issue is, let's say, anxiety, for example. So once we discuss, you know, what the triggers are for those, for that issue, the situations that cause the symptoms of anxiety to worsen, we might talk a little bit about childhood relationships. Then we'll discuss what you want your life to look like without that issue of anxiety. And that's where we'll start to build the framework for the transformational recording. And then that's all kind of in the first 20 to 30 minutes of the session. And then the remainder of the session is a hypnosis, or you are in hypnosis during the remainder of the session. So I would guide you into a relaxed state. And then I like to think of myself as a guide for your subconscious mind, and you're going through all of the past experiences from generally childhood, although sometimes it goes up into later years. And I'm guiding your subconscious to find the beliefs that you formed about yourself that are causing the issue, and in this example of anxiety, that you're experiencing today. So
can you give an example of what that looks like? What's something that maybe people, they might not have experienced, but they could relate to, they could understand, like, how those dots would be connected? Like, what's something that is so, somewhat generic and common?
Sure. If we're thinking about anxiety specifically, someone might have had an experience where, as a child, their mother, I'm totally making this up off the cuff here, their mother might have pressured them or had very high expectations for success and for, like, control. And don't get me wrong, that mother meant well and was trying to do the best that they could as a parent. And don't think I'm criticizing all parents.
Though, but all parents are pretty much the worst.
So this client might have had a memory of an event where they were taking care of a dog, and the dog pooped on the ground, and the mother freaked out. And so that individual saw that their mother was angry, and then was ashamed because they didn't take care of the dog properly. You know, it can all spiral into this belief. So as a young child,
I love that you work dog poop into this story.
I don't know. It just came up. I don't know.
All the things. That would have been the last thing I would have guessed you would have chosen. All right, so.
Okay, it could have been spilled milk. I don't know.
You so know, you didn't, like, clean up the dog poop. Mother comes home, is upset.
Right.
And a belief system is formed or entrenched or, like, reinforced.
So in that scenario, it might be that, you know, I'm not good enough. I can't take care of a dog. I've made my mother upset. Or it could also, same scenario, the belief could be more like, in order to make sure that my mom is happy, I need to stay in control and make sure all the responsibilities are met. So same scenario could have two different belief systems, and really both of those two different belief systems could lead to anxiety. It doesn't even really matter what the belief system was that was developed, but let's say you were, I don't know, 7 years old when that happened, and you developed this belief, and now you're 47 and you still have that same belief, but it's completely irrelevant because you're not 7 years old anymore. And you
hate dogs and you don't know why.
Right, you hate dogs and you don't know why. Oh, this dog scenario.
So
Well,
you're
this is
acting.
why you should tell me what you want to talk to me about on a podcast,
No,
so I
this
can
is
come
great.
up with a better example.
So then you're an adult and you're working out of this framework that's
That you
built around
developed.
belief systems from this thing. And
From
it's
when you're
like,
7 years
so
old.
you don't need those. Just like we wouldn't want advice from our 7-year-old self or something. And you don't want to like rewrite the history. It's really about changing your relationship with yourself relative to that
And
experience.
when you see that those beliefs were formed when you were 7 years old, and now you're 47 years old, and you don't need those beliefs anymore. Now, granted, they served you well at 7 years old because they kept you out of trouble and they kept your mom happy and they helped you to learn, responsibilities and yada, yada, yada. But now you're 47 and you don't need to be, worried about what your mom thinks of you and to make sure you take responsibility so that you don't upset her and all the whole list of things. So when you recognize what the belief is that's driving the issue, right? The belief is really running the show. So when you recognize what that belief is, then you can let go of it because you can recognize that you don't need it anymore. And then even more powerful is to form new beliefs that are better and more powerful and help you to live the life that you described to me in that intake session. So,
And does that all take place in that one, Zoom call or?
yeah, in the span of 2 hours. And then once you, so we found the scenes from your past that have caused you to develop a belief about yourself that are causing the anxiety. Then you've released the beliefs. So what we would do is take the new beliefs and make a recording with them. So it's a generally about a 15-minute recording. Unless there's some sleep issues, then it might be a longer recording that's helping you to go to sleep. And then, so even though all of this happens in the first session, which is around 2 hours, I would say that that's probably like 25% of the work. And then the next 75% of the work happens after the session, in which case you're listening to the recording and you're planting the seeds of your new powerful beliefs and making a change, experiencing a transformation.
It's really powerful, and I have a couple things to mention to this from my personal experience. I mean, I already mentioned earlier about the quitting drinking, and I remember I tried to quit drinking for like a long time, and it took me a long time to realize why I wasn't able to do it. Like, I quit a bunch of times for very short periods of time, a couple days, maybe a couple weeks, once or twice, but there it was eventually after I really tried to like examine the self and why I was having trouble. It was like I didn't believe that I could do it. Like I didn't have the confidence to believe that I could actually do it for the rest of my life. So I couldn't really get past that because I didn't really believe I could do it. I was definitely in my own way. And so once I knew that it had nothing to do with alcohol, it had to do with confidence. So once I could identify, like, this is a lack of confidence in myself, then I could meditate on confidence. And I remember I listened to a confidence-based hypnosis about every day for about a month. And it made it so much easier because within a short period of time, I was just building the confidence in my ability. It's not that I didn't want to quit, it's just I didn't know how to believe in myself to do it.
Sure.
It was very helpful with that. And then I remember when you learn this style of hypnotherapy, where it's designed to have this very impactful transformation over a very short period of time, one session, maybe in rare cases, a second or a third, that you did a little barter. Like we were out in LA for a week. You were doing a workshop on this style, and you were working with somebody. And I guess everybody, when you left the certification, like needed practice. So there was like some barter where it's like, I'll work with your mom, you work with my husband, kind of thing, with the friends you made there. And I was fortunate enough to experience that style with one of the girls, I forget her name, that you,
Brandy.
Brandy, that you went to the workshop with. And I, I'm open to it. I've done hypnosis, but I didn't think that much of it. And then, we had it on the schedule. I get in bed, put on the headphones, and say hello. And, she starts taking me through this thing. And when you just let go and make space for like think something to arise, the thing that you need to have arise will arise. Like, it's amazing how much we will hide this stuff from ourselves. I remember within minutes, like I'm a 4-year-old on my doorstep the day my father is walking out of the house, like the day of my parents' separation, which is da da da, at the time, like 36 years ago, which I had never really think about, was just like right there. And I'm in that experience. But I'm in that experience as an observer, and Brandy had me like embodying my 4-year-old self, and then being an observer, and then being me at the time. I guess I was 42, like being 42-year-old me in that environment on the doorstep with my mother, my father, my sisters, and seeing me as a child, and being able to say like. Because first of all, got me to realize that a lot of the beliefs I have now were born from that moment. Like that moment that, like, oh, dad's leaving, what's going on here? And this sensation of maybe abandonment, I'm not good enough, I'm not worthy of love. If my parents loved me, they'd stay together. Like whatever crap is gonna arise is born out of that experience. So first of all, you get to see like, oh, that's where this came from. But then you could tactfully, when someone's kind of walking you through the process, say, well, look, you're 42 now. Like, look at your beautiful family. Like, look at the things you have in your life. Like, you could tell your 4-year-old self,
It's gonna
like,
be okay.
it's gonna be okay. Like, you don't need to feel that way. And here I am just kind of waltzing into this phone call appointment, like, oh, this will be interesting. And it's like, boom, it's not jarring, but it's profound. It's a profound experience in a very short period of time. And all the guide does is kind of make space for you to do what ultimately you know you need. Like there's an inner wisdom that we can't outthink. Like if you just make space for your body to heal what it needs to heal, and you give it room, it knows what it needs to heal from. And it's a
Well,
great tool.
I would add also that I think the beautiful, profound part of the experience that you're describing is that when you have a skilled guide that can help you to bypass or move beneath the thinking conscious mind, which is like the logic, and get down into the subconscious mind where your emotions reside, then you can look at this scene from your past that might be very familiar, like you know that that happened when you were four and we're having this conversation. You could describe it, but in the state of hypnosis with a skilled guide, they will help you to see the emotions. And that's what's really powerful that we don't get when we're just in conversation in our logical thinking mind.
Like, what do you mean? Like, use my experience there. What would
Sure.
be an
I
example?
mean, the way you described it did include the emotions because you had this experience already. But logically, you could say, well, I don't think I was really that affected by my parents' separation. Like I still had a roof over my head, and I did see my mom and my dad, and you know, I remember having weekends with my dad and we had a great time and I went to the beach with my dad and I remember that and, you know, everything's fine. Right? Like right. We've had this conversation before. Everything's fine. Like my parents still get along, but there was still this underlying four-year-old who wanted your parents to get back together. Like even, I don't know, 2 years ago, the idea came up. Like they're never getting back together.
Yeah, I remember for like decades, I just assumed, oh, my parents will get back together eventually.
Right.
That's so silly. It's so silly how a child thinks.
Right. But like logically, you're like, I don't think that separation really affected me and who I am and the decisions I make and the beliefs that I have about myself.
But of course it does.
But emotionally, of course it affected you. And in the state of hypnosis, that can come forth.
Right.
Right. Like you like, you know, the logical mind is kind of like the armor and we've removed the armor to get down to the emotions. And that's what really, like, emotions will always win over logic in terms of making a decision.
Right. Yeah. That's being seen now with like all the fear and how people make weird decisions
Right.
You know,
like for
fear.
Example, I'll give you my own example. And I think I've shared this with you at least, but logically, I know that sugar is not good for you. It's inflammatory. You know, I won't go through the list of things that it's not good for. But anyhow, I know that sugar is not good for you. But I have a sweet tooth. And there's a store near us that we go to that, a grocery store, that they put the cupcakes on your way to the checkout line. So on my way to the grocery store, I'm like, okay, I'm not getting cupcakes today. They don't make me feel good. I know sugar is bad for you. I'm not going to get them. And so logically, sure, I can say that all day long. But emotionally, I go into the store and it's just like habit, right? And when I eat them, I'm like, oh, they're so good. And they're comforting and they like allow me to kind of escape from reality for a minute, and then they're gone and I'm like, oh, what did I do? You know, but like that's the emotions driving the show.
Gotcha.
So that emotion will win over logic.
So that all being said, I think that was a really good snapshot of like what the process of getting that session is. So if you are curious about that, then you can definitely reach out to Sarah and schedule it. It's not something that people regret. It's not for everybody.
It definitely can be a tough, a trigger, like it can be challenging.
It's work.
Yes, yeah. It is work.
Don't do it if you're not ready to work. If you want a quick pill, then if you want a quick pill to fix problems, our channel in general is probably not the right place. You know, all the things that are probably worthwhile, you know, require some type of commitment, dedication, and work.
But I think when you reframe your beliefs, reprogram your beliefs, then the commitment to those things that are really valuable and the diligence of doing the things that you need to do come more easily.
Oh yeah, I agree 100%. I think I've mentioned that a lot throughout the podcast too, that like when you're really clear on your values, the things that are driving your decisions, then the steps along the way become a lot more matter of fact, and the conflict in the mind that we face with things like sugar, like eating, do I eat, I want to eat, I don't want to eat, I shouldn't, I want, like all that stuff kind of dissolves the clearer you are of like why you do anything and everything. And that being said, another thing that we offer that is in that category of kind of identifying what's important to you, whether it's like the qualities or the values that you want to be dictating your lifestyle, the course that's been out now for probably a couple years is a great place to do that for those that are more maybe self-motivated, that want to follow along with a course, like a step-by-step kind of algorithm of identifying what changes that you kind of want in your life, and then just getting some guidance as you take those steps. It's not as individualized and personalized, but it can be really effective, especially if that's your style. Some people, I think, really thrive even more so on that when they have that type of kind of project that they're faced with. Another type of coaching is, and it's not available yet, but I've been coaching a certain way for quite some time, and I am going to be opening up a few spots to do remote coaching, and that looks a lot different than Sarah's style of coaching.
Mm-hmm.
It's more, it follows the same idea as the course, that you start off by some self-observation, some identifying of values, you know, kind of visualizing how you want your life to be. It's definitely health oriented. So if you're looking for a quick fix, it's not the right thing. If you're like, I'm willing to take steps, I don't know exactly where I want to go. I know that I don't want it to be a continuation of what I've been doing.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know exactly what steps to take. And I need some guidance on that process. Then my style of coaching might be really suitable, where it's generally a 5-week process, where each week you get a phone call with me. And those calls are going to be around 75 to 90 minutes. They're going to go over quite a bit. So we kind of break things into 4 different categories. It would be mindset, movement, nutrition, and recovery. And we just analyze like what your practices are now within each of those categories. What's a desired outcome? Like, what's the direction we want our decisions to point? And then identifying what's the appropriate step for you to take now, given all that information based on where you are right now. And it's different for everybody,
mm-hmm.
because some people could take a more aggressive route where they're like, I'm at a crossroads where I'll do anything and I'll do everything at once. So if you tell me to do these 5 things for this category and these 5 things, I just want to do it all and do it right. And I don't find that that's the most common scenario, but some people
are
like that.
Sometimes you just need some baby steps.
Generally, people need baby steps. So each week, you'll have like a new step that you're kind of working on within each category. And we try to make it where we're really working on like the lowest hanging fruit, the things that are the easiest to implement that seem to have the most kind of bang for your buck. Like, for instance, I'll give you an example. If your sleep is really off, well, there's so much benefit from improving sleep because it has such a far-reaching interaction with all the other components of our life. So if you could, you know, make a small change that increases the quality of your sleep by, you know, 20 or 30 minutes over the course of 100 or 200 days, you're a different person from that. I mean, that's
mm-hmm.
a profound change that you can create from that little thing. So what we try to do is we take each category of those 4 categories and we try to tweak the dial on something from each category so that you're changing the course very slightly, your trajectory for each category. And then there's this synergy that,
mm-hmm.
you know, weeks or months down the road, you're in a completely different place because you've changed your diet a little bit and your sleep a little bit and your recovery a little bit and the way that you think about things and the way you approach. And it's very effective for those that are open-minded to new ideas. They want to do it a different way than they're doing it now and they just want help going through those steps. And that's generally a 5-week process and then usually you're good. And then if you want to revisit 6, 12, 18 months down the road, you could do another 5 weeks and just kind of build on your progress. So
mm-hmm.
that should be available shortly, and that'll be on the website. We'll send something out to let people know. It's probably only going to be limited to 2 or 3 people at a time. So I just ask to be patient if there's not a spot for you. But you do get a lot of my attention. So I pour myself into you. It's very individualized. It's very specific. It's a very long phone call. There will be exercise routines given. They will be custom for what your needs are. There'll be maybe video transmission for that. And then there'll be also check-ins throughout the week. You'll have my cell phone number. You could text me pictures of your meals, whatever's needed. It'll be a very customized approach. Also on the horizon, which I think is really exciting because this is probably not of greater benefit, but a little bit more thorough than like listening to one of the current videos that we have now, but not as expensive either monetarily or time-wise for your individualized session, but there's going to be a workshop. So this is more of a...
I was waiting to hear what you were going to say.
Sarah's going to be providing a workshop for listeners, and I think there's going to be a discount that we'll have for any member of the Mindful Movement. And if you're not aware, there is a membership that you have some exclusive content that if you haven't checked out yet, please do. It's a great way to support the channel and the community. But that is going to be nice because it makes it a little bit more accessible. It's going to be much lower price than getting a one-on-one session with you. But there'll be a group Zoom session that is still somewhat customized because there'll be a theme for each one. And they're a lot longer than, you know, the typical weekly guided meditation that comes out on the channel. Do you want to touch on what that would look like?
Sure. So the one coming up soonest, is that a word, soonest?
If it's not, it should be.
Anyhow, the next date coming up will be a group hypnotherapy workshop for specifically for anxiety. And we picked that specifically because it seems to be a hot topic right now. I think I don't know any statistics off the top of my head, but it's one of those there's a lot of it, and it's probably the most requested and most viewed topic on our channel, and I would say the majority of the clients that have come to me in the last 6 months have some underlying anxiety as an issue that they want to deal with. So that's the first topic, and it will be a group session. However, it will be very similar to what I described from the individual session, and it just won't be personalized for the specific person.
Will people still be able to work on something specific for them? It just won't be discussed, but they could go through the inner dialogue of it?
Correct. So because it's a webinar, I will see the participants, but the participants won't see each other. And so you'll be doing this work on your own from comfort of your own home or wherever you decide to do the session. So there'll be, I would say, three sections. So first section would be kind of the digging or uncovering of the belief system that you formed. And then there'll be time to journal and write what you uncovered, what came up for you. And then beyond that, then we'll be reframing or reprogramming the belief system. And in that situation, the participants will have an opportunity to write an affirmation or like a new statement of truth so that their new belief will be included in the recording. So in a way it will be personalized, but you know, not quite as personalized as if you were to do one-on-one. And I've done these in person when we were doing things in person.
Way back in the day.
So one of the questions that always comes up that I just wanted to kind of dispel the idea, the question is, well, what if someone's belief isn't what I believe? And the answer is that your subconscious mind will really only hear and listen to and believe what you believe. So, you know, this is not real example, but if, let's say...
Is it about dog poop?
Not about dog poop. I'm never going to live that down. So let's say we're in a group and someone, you know, one person wants to reduce their weight and one person doesn't because they're already, you know, thin. Maybe they have health issues and they don't want to lose any more weight. And I say something about reducing weight. That person that doesn't want to reduce their weight will almost like ignore that statement. So it works in groups, even though
it works. It's a great compromise. I think it's tremendous benefit. And there's something to be said about, even though it's not like, you know, the community of being in a room with a bunch of people going through it, just the knowing that there's, you know, maybe dozens more people at that same time working on the same type of stuff. You know, there's a sense of connectedness that that can still bring, even though it's through Zoom.
So hopefully down the road we'll be able to meet in person again, and we'll do workshops or retreats.
Yeah, that'll be great.
Yeah.
But it's a great, I think it's going to be an outstanding tool for people, for the listeners out there that want to take a little bit deeper dive. And, you know, it's just a lot more accessible. The scheduling of the one-on-one sessions is, you know, limited. So it's a way to reach a lot more people. So I'm excited, and I'm excited to be a part of it. I want to be on that call and go through it. Anything else that you want to touch on today?
You told me not to plan, so I didn't plan, which is uncommon for me.
Well, to the listeners out there, I just want to extend deepest gratitude for all the support and for your listening today. I appreciate you guys. Just keep tuning in. Appreciate all the feedback I've been getting. I do ask you that if you do feel like this is providing value for you, then please just share it, and maybe you can inspire someone else to take a positive change in their life. If you have a request for someone you'd like to hear more from, send it my way. I'll do my best to get them on the podcast if I think it's you know, suitable for our scenario. And if you would be so kind to go to your podcast player and leave a review, I'd greatly appreciate it. I want to thank you all for your listening today, for tuning in, and hopefully that you stay tuned for more episodes coming soon. And thanks again, Sarah, for showing up today.
Thanks for having me.
And getting in front of the camera. It's just great. And, you know, I personally thank you. I'm grateful that I have you in my life, and I'm honored to be a part of your life.
I'm grateful for you as well.
Yeah.
You make some really good dinners.
I am the house cook here. Well, again, thanks again, listeners. I hope you have a terrific day.